for all of the companionship, all of the love, all the things that we are needed in life. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, so quick show of hands. Who are my extroverts? Okay. Who are my introverts? Oh. Who are the people like, I don't really want to answer this question. Can you please move on? Okay, yeah, or maybe you're like right in the middle. There's some people that are right in the middle. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, as you heard Heather mention, really ends with this concept of community, especially for us who live in an age of individuality. As time goes on, it seems to be that community is less and less important in life. We may value like the immediate community of our family, but even then, we become more and more independent. We tell young people, you know what? You don't need anyone in order to live in this life. We try to build a sense in them that they could go through life alone without any help from anyone around them. And I get the sentiment. I think it's fine, but I think it also does some damage because you are not created to be alone. It's a very fascinating thing when you study Genesis, right? God creates the sun and the moon and the stars. And he says, good. He creates the earth and the seas and the sea monsters and the platypi. And he goes, good. And then he does horses and he does cows. And lambs, and God looks at that and says, good. And then he creates the trees and the grass and the ladybugs, good. And then he creates man, and he says, very good. But then there's a problem. Something causes God to say, that's not good, which is kind of weird. After creating everything, something causes him to pause and say, that I cannot support. And that was, the guy was all alone. And he actually says it is not good for man to be alone. Now again, I know that I'm going to have a hard fight with my introverts. I totally get it. Like, but I love being alone, and this would be fantastic. And if everyone could just please stop bothering me, I would greatly appreciate it. God never designed you to be in isolation in a permanent fashion. I believe that God created us with the ability to be alone at times. Even extroverts have this feeling that they still need alone time. They have it fewer than my introverts. But we're all designed to have the alone time, but we're always designed to have companionship or friendship. And more importantly than that, a community. God designed us to be in community. He did not design us to live this life all by ourselves. I've often lamented when I found out people who have tragedy hit their life and they don't have a church community to lean on. It's very hard when I think of people who are going through separation or divorce in their life and they have to do it all alone and they've lost family and they've lost friends and maybe they're not involved with a church. And those are the times when people say, I feel very alone. Even though we are surrounded by billions of people, we end up feeling alone. God never designed you to be alone. He designed you to be in community. And he tells us in a passage that starts getting used quite frequently, this is actually one of the main passages that I get you speak on a lot, especially when it comes to marriage. I'm curious who had this passage as their marriage vows. I can think of two right off the top of my head that I know that have used Ecclesiastes chapter 4 as their wedding verse. So let's see if we can get into this and figure this out. All right, so remember he had talked about how man's fate is like that of the animals. I had a lot of pushback about the animals. I know, okay, Rich said that their dog pooed out of spite, so they have to have some sort of thing. I get that. I think that, and it's, I always forget, you know, you watch the movie Independence Day, right? And the aliens have come and they're blowing up the city and they're running in the tunnel, right? And they've got the dog, and then they jump into the thing and she's yelling, "Boomer!" And the dog's running and everyone's on the edge of their seat and the dog is safe and everyone cheers. Though literally thousands of people just got killed. We love the dog more. So I get it. I'm sorry that I offended you a little bit on that. But we realize, again, the theme of Ecclesiastes is everything is meaningless because you're going to die. And that's just the way it's going to be. So he goes on, and he continues to push this. And he gets a little bit... He gets very caring, but he also gets very depressed, I think, at the exact same time. Verse 1, again, I looked and I saw all the oppression that was taking place under the sun. Does anyone here like oppression? No. We bristle under it. We hate it when we see it. We don't like when people who are strong take advantage of people who are weak. And we especially don't like it when it's animals involved, right? You're channel surfing and you come across, you know, the SPCA and there's the dogs that are being, and they have the pictures of the dog. What do you do right away? Yeah. Now, some of you are like, but wait a second, shouldn't we help the dogs? Yes, we should help the dog, but it's sometimes really tough because when it comes to oppression, when someone strong hurts someone weak, we can't handle that. We cry out for justice, and that's what he's saying. I see all this oppression, and he says, I saw the tears of the oppressed, and they have no comforter. Power was on the side of their oppressors, and they have no comforter, which again was great for the writer of this book, who is understanding that we have to have empathy. We have to understand the plight of those who might be in a weaker position than ours, so that we can somehow make sure that they don't continue to be in that oppressive state. And he actually sheds tears over it. He's like, I think this is wrong. I don't like it. And I know all of my young ones are like, this is great. This is power. This is justice. Let's fight the man. And of course, I don't know who the man is, but you're going to fight him. And we want to have this. But then there sometimes gets this point when we feel like we got to change the channel. Look at what he says. And I declared that the dead who had already died are happier than the living who are still alive. He's like, isn't it great when you die? Because then when you die, no more oppression. Now again, this isn't, I don't think he's got some suicidal tendencies or ideations or anything like that. I think he's just realizing that living in this world is terrible, and it's better when we finally just pass away because we don't have to deal with horrible, nasty people around us. You don't have to deal with professors or teachers. You don't have to deal with parents who are horrible. You don't have to deal with hormonal teenagers anymore. It's this wonderful thing when you don't have to deal with all this stuff. You change the channel. And he continues on, and he says, firstly, but better than both is he who has not yet been, who has not seen the evil that is done under the sun. He essentially says how wonderful it is for those who have never even been born and not experienced this sense of evil. Hey, Robert, can you shut those doors back there? Okay, whose car is that? Yeah, shut those doors, though. Robert, can you shut those doors? There we go. Someone's going to shut the doors because I know none of you are listening to me. You're not. I can tell. You're like, what is that noise? What I told you is that everything is meaningless. Life is meaningless. This world is meaningless. Your existence is meaningless. That's why you tuned me out. Yeah. Verse 4, and I saw that all labor and all achievement spring from man's envy of his neighbor. Who here is envious of their neighbor? There we go. Thank you. Thank you for being honest. We all are, especially when you start comparing likes, especially when you start comparing views, especially when you start comparing comments. We want to somehow have it better than the people around us. We get upset when other people who are undeserving get stuff that is better than what we've got. Yes, Irene?
A RAV4 up against the bricks.
A RAV4 up against the bricks. Yeah, we got two other churches meeting at the same time. It's going on and off, so I think hopefully one of the other churches will.
Oh, the other
church. Yeah. Oh, or is it Andrina's? It might be yours. There we go. Oh, I love it. I love it when this works. We live in a world that we are constantly envious. Who here gets depressed when you look at Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat and you see how great everyone else's life is? Yeah. We get this sense that the world around us favors others, and we are left behind to simply work and work and work and not really get ahead in life. It's depressing. If you live with comparison living, you will, I guarantee you, always be depressed. Because you start looking around and say, well, why does that person have money and I don't? Well, why does that person have a nice car and I don't? Well, why does that person have a beautiful wife or a handsome husband and I don't? Why does that person get to live in that house and I don't? I mean, let's face it, we're all better than everyone else, right? So why should they get better stuff than us? That's how we think. We live in this state of enviousness, and it's really, really terrible, because he says this too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. When you live your life comparing yourself to others, it's meaningless. It does not help. It never has, never will. He keeps going, and he gives this proverb, and it's really interesting. The fool folds his hands and ruins himself. Better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind. What does that mean? Well, if you do nothing in life, you're probably not going to succeed very well. If your life is filled with just putting stuff on social media or playing video games or doing absolutely being completely and utterly unproductive in life, your life is not going to be good. I was watching, they had this, I don't even know, where they were interviewing this young guy who was talking and lamenting about how many hours his employer wanted him to work. Did anyone else see that? It's hilarious. It's this guy, and you could tell he's a little bit pasty. He probably didn't see the sun a lot. And he's like, so the guy was like, well, how many hours did your employer ask you to work in a day? He's like, you know, like on Monday, like I had to work 6 whole hours. Like, you just can't sustain this. And then he's like, so the next day, that was a little much. So the next day I worked 4 hours and I was a lot happier. And then, but I was tired and I really wanted to hang out with my friends. So the next day I didn't even show up to work. And so the guy asked, like, well, how many hours in a week do you think is good to work? And he's like, I don't know, 12, 14? You, Joshua, I like this guy. No, if you fold your hands and do nothing, if you live your life as always wanting other people to care for you, if you want others to do stuff so that you can just do whatever you want, you fold your hands and you're going to ruin yourself. Now, some people take it too far the other way. I chuckled when I, in seminary, was handed I think I've told this story, but it's always a great story. I was handed in seminary during a pastoral formation, so it was P101, and they're like, well, let's talk a little bit about what it means to be a pastor. Of course, one of the very first things that most people going into the ministry want to know is, tell me a typical day. And so this pastor actually had it. He handed out this piece of paper about a work week, about what is typical for a pastor to work. And so it usually starts off 6 a.m., wake up, your wife has made you breakfast, and that's really wonderful. It's really hilarious, some of the stuff that's on there. And 7 o'clock, you then do your devotions. But then you're in the office by 7:45, and you're checking in, and you're doing stuff. And you do that till about 12, and then about 12, you get about a 15-minute break for lunch. And then 12:30, you're out on calls, and you're doing that. And then you come back, and you do some sermon prep. And then you go back home for dinner for about 45 minutes. You know, pay the bills, mow the lawn, eat dinner, all that stuff. And then in the evening, go out, and you make visits on your parishioners. Get home somewhere between 9 and 9:30, 10 o'clock, do your family prayers, and then you go to bed. So we actually calculated this. This is no joke. Someone way wittier than me actually raised his hand, and he says, who's paying for my divorce lawyer? Because my wife is not going to allow this schedule. We calculated up, and it was somewhere around 80 hours a week. Now, is it good to be a workaholic? No, because with two handfuls of toil, you're just chasing after the wind. If you find yourself constantly working and not spending time with family and in community, you'll find out that that's meaningless. Again, I was very thankful when a pastor pulled me aside and he was telling me all about how churches can and will, like, take all your time. Like, if you allow the church to overschedule you, the church will gladly accept your 80-hour work week, and then they'll have a wonderful funeral and talk about how great you are, but then they're going to get another pastor and completely forget about you. So working 80 hours a week and destroying your family is not worth it. You're chasing after stuff you shouldn't. It's better to have one handful with tranquility. We learn balance. We learn that we do need to work, but we can't become workaholics. This is all very practical stuff that is super helpful. And then he continues to go on this concept as he's thinking about it, like, well, if I'm working, who am I working for, and what's the benefits that I got? So he goes, verse 7, again, I saw something meaningless under the sun. There was a man all alone. He had neither son nor brother. There was no end to his toil, yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. For who am I toiling, he asked, and why am I depriving myself of enjoyment? This too is meaningless, a miserable existence. You can go through life and you can say to yourself, you know what, I think it'd be better to be alone, because being alone, you get to make your own decisions, right? You don't have to battle constantly, like, can we please turn the heater up a little bit more in the house or in the sanctuary? You don't have to worry about, does the toilet paper go over or under? You don't have to worry about, like, what time do you eat dinner? And then also, when do you open presents? Is it Christmas Eve or Christmas Day? Without someone else there, you can just live your life. And some of you are like, that sounds fantastic. Now, if you're married, don't say that out loud, because then you're going to get punched, and that's okay. Some people, though, say it's so great that if I just work and I work for myself and I have no one else to worry about and care for, I can work, make a ton of money, and then live great. And what he is saying is that is meaningless. It's a miserable business. For anyone who wants to just go through this life alone, it's not smart. Now, don't take this too far. Because I think sometimes people get addicted to being in relationship. So I'm going to speak mainly right now to my younger folk. It's really important that you realize that being in relationship is good, but they're sometimes taking that to an extreme. I have known people who were like serial daters, and they just kept dating and dating and dating and dating until finally it was like, do you even know what it's like to make your own decision in life? Right? At that point, you need to also learn how to do things on your own. Now, sometimes you can be like, it's great. I don't have to worry about some girlfriend to buy a dinner for. I don't have to worry about some boyfriend who's always calling me and bugging me because he's so needy. Yeah, I get that. But taking that to an extreme is really, really bad. If you're not in a relationship with someone else, that's fine. Be in a relationship with others. Friends, family, community. And he's going to go on now and give this wonderful thing. This is what is often read at a lot of weddings. Two are better than one because they have a good return for their work. God never designed you to be alone. God designed you to be in community. Obviously, the tightest community you can be in is in a husband-wife relationship. The next strongest is being in a parent-child relationship. But if you don't have those, then you need to be in a community relationship. Two are better than one. And he, you know, fleshes this out. Because they have a good return for, and he says, if one falls down, his friend can help him up. But pity the fool who falls and has no one to help him up. Only Rich laughed at that one. Did you laugh at that one? Thank you. You got a little chuckle out of that one. You all heard it? Okay. I was, you know, when I give my jokes, I got to get more feedback. No, don't give me more feedback. When you find yourself in struggle and in pain, God never meant for you to do that alone, ever. Yet we get to positions in life where things are going bad and we tend to self-isolate. And I get it. I've been there too. Those times when painful experiences cause you to say, I just don't want to be around other people. And when you're not around other people, you do a thing where you get in kind of a cycle of negative self-talk. Nobody likes me. I'm all alone, which causes you to push people away. And so then you feel even more alone, and then you get depressed. God never designed you to be that way, ever. In fact, God designed us that when bad things happen, the first thing we should do is reach out. So why don't we? I know the reason why. It's because people are jerks. We reach out and we want to help someone, or we're asking for help from someone, and then often they don't give us back what we need, and then they throw on the good Christian platitudes, or they say some stuff which makes us feel guilty for feeling bad, and so then we just kind of shut down and turn off. God never designed you to go through your life and your pain and your misery alone, ever. And pushing people away is just not helpful. Well, I do keep moving. I have to keep moving. When you try to go it alone, all it does is tear you down to the point where you become a shell of the person that you used to be. So one thing that God is trying to help us understand is, first of all, if you are that person, if you are the one who struggles with relationships, if you're the one who struggles finding connections with people, or you have trouble understanding and being around others, you still have to try, and you still have to do, and you still can be a part of a community. That's what I love about church. Church is filled with some of the weirdest people I've ever met in my entire life. Do you realize that so many of you I would just not hang out with in real life? Do you realize that? Same, right? Oh, fake. Oh, fake. But it's true. Would you hang out with absolutely, like, if you look back here and look at everyone like, yeah, I'd hang out with that person. You would? Well, you're a nice person. I'm not saying you're not a nice, I'm not saying that it's not being nice. It's who you run with. Typically, you're not going to have a relationship with absolutely everyone. But the nice part about church is this is a place where love and acceptance happens. This is the place where you can come, you can be your weird, wacky, crazy self, and you're still going to have people actually like you. Why? Not because you are fake, but because it is a genuine love for people that comes from being loved by God. We have a bond and a community that is much deeper than that. This is one of my problems. I was just telling this to Marge this morning. I have a real problem with Patrick Mahomes. Yeah, who? Patrick Mahomes, he's a football player. Yeah. And he's a very good quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs. And because he's the Kansas City Chiefs, he's in the AFC West, which is where my Raiders are at. That's why I hate him. But the problem is, he is a strong Christian. And I'm like, what do I do? Like, I hate him, but I've got to love him, but I hate him. Some of you, when it comes to church community, for whatever reason, keep everyone at a distance. That's the reason why I'm so thankful doing ministry with Heather, because Heather won't keep you at a distance. She'll, like, glob on to you and, like, you know, you're going to suck you in, and it's like, you got attacked by Heather. Yeah, congratulations. Some of you, though, purposely push people away that are here at church, and it's just not healthy. Some of you keep the church at a distance. These are people that just don't feel comfortable talking or hanging out with those in the church. And I'm just telling you that that is a dangerous position to take. Now, obviously, I'm preaching a little bit to the choir, but I think some of you have these tendencies, don't you? Don't raise your hand. But I know that there's many people who I just don't feel comfortable. And so everyone stays just a little bit away. God never designed you to be that way. God designed you to be in community. Community with other people. Two are better than one. Because if you fall down and you have issues and you need help, one of the places you can go is the church. This is where we show grace and mercy. Yes, sometimes we do some really, really dumb things. But it's at the church that we could come and say, man, I've done some really dumb things. And what do I do about that? And then you hear about the grace of God, the forgiveness of sins, and the promise of eternal life. Don't go this alone, please. If one falls down, his friend can help him up. We are here to help. And if you are the one who is being asked for help, learn how to give it. Learn how to be there for others. So for some people, it comes supernaturally. For some, it's just easy. It's in your DNA. It's how God wired you. But for others, we're not bent towards helping, especially if that person is someone maybe we don't like for a reason. Two are better than one. And verse 11 also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Again, this is now we're talking about, especially in this time and this place, traveling would be very dangerous. I mean, as it is now, sometimes traveling in certain places by yourself can be a dangerous thing. But having someone there is super helpful, because if you are someone who is feeling the cold and you don't have that other person there, that other person can help you out. You got to imagine these travelers, and they're going down and they're spending the night. Where are they spending the night? In a cave, in the grass, just anywhere, because often you wouldn't end up spending a time in a town. You could lie down and keep warm together. But sometimes people are like, no, I'm strong enough. I can do it alone. No, sometimes you're not. Stop trying to be so heroic. It's okay to say, yeah, and again, it's okay if you're like, well, I don't have a significant other. That's fine. You have others. You have friends. You have family. Some of you might say, no, my friends have abandoned me, and my family absolutely hates me. Okay, fine. You have church. Well, my church hates me. That's a lie. They do not. And even if your church is the worst church known to mankind, you still got another one. God. So, how can one keep warm? And then I love this. He says, though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves, and a cord of three strands is not quickly broken. I remember when I was in high school, I had a friend group that I was running with, and one of my friends, name's Gary. It was really sad because sometimes he got bullied and he got picked on. And I remember one time I was coming out of the band room, and there were some people that had kind of surrounded Gary and me and my buddy RJ, and we came out and we're like, what the heck's going on? And they're like pushing him, and they're hitting him, and they're hurting him. And it was really easy because Gary was all alone. And so immediately, me and RJ busted through, and I swear that's where the Avengers picked up that thing. We kind of all, you know, we had back to back to back, and we're like, come on, come on, come on, what do you want to do, right? And I was kind of a big guy. RJ is kind of a big guy. And immediately, once we did that, guess what happened? The fight stopped. If you want to come after him, you're going to have to come after us too as well. And immediately, they all started dissipating. And I was thinking to myself, what cowards. What cowards to surround someone and do that. That's just terrible. But that's, again, what this world is like. This is why it is so important to be in community. And again, going back to the animals, that's why so oftentimes those predators are after the herds. And what do? They want to spook the herd. Why do they want to spook the herd? Because once the herd gets going, who's the one that's left behind? The slow and the weak. And then what do? They go after the slow and the weak. That is how Satan works. That's why he wants you isolated. That's why when he sees what's going on in your life and you feel sad and you feel depressed and you're like, nothing's going right in my life and I've been making some stupid choices, or I just found out that a friend of mine died, or I'm having struggles at my work and people aren't nice and I don't know what to do. That's when Satan goes, this is it. Now I'm going to isolate them. Because if he can take you away from your friends or your family or a significant other, or even isolate you from the church, then he's got you. Now you're done. Now you're picked off. God never designed you to go in this world alone. The one may be overpowered, living your life in this feeling of only being alone. That is never God's design. Two can defend themselves. And then it's this weird thing, and it's really interesting reading some of the commentaries and hearing how people, a cord of three strands is not quickly broken. Wait a second, where's this third? I thought this whole thing was, you know, it's me and then someone else. Well, there's two things going on here. One is the strength in numbers. A cord of one strand, you can cut pretty easily. A cord of two strands, how about three? How about four? How about 10? How about 87? Cord of 87 strands, can that be easily broken? This idea that the strength we have in our community, the strength we have with our parents, the strength we have with our children, the strength we have in a higher concentration of people. And that's why it's really, I'm worried with how some people continue to isolate. And I know that the nuclear family is important, but God never also designed you to be just in a nuclear family. I know that nowadays we can travel, we can move, and it's harder to be connected in a further way. But God always designed you to be having parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, nieces, nephews, grandnieces, grandnephews, third cousins twice removed. God designed you to be in that, because if you have that as your family, if you have that as your tribe, you are safe, because you can't cut that cord. So often, though, people reject that. Maybe because they don't like the person. Maybe because it's not fun. Maybe they're a flaming liberal or a hardcore conservative. Maybe they didn't vote for the person that I wanted them to vote for in the last presidential election. Maybe they don't do things the way I would like them to do. Maybe they drive a really garbage car. Maybe they root for the Raiders. I cannot handle these people. You gotta stop. I'm done. I'm done with every single time I turn on some social media and people are just continuing to attack each other. I'm done. Stop. Stop. I'm begging you. God never designed you to be in an adversarial relationship with so many other people. Before you start pointing out that speck of dirt in your eyes, why don't you look at what you got in your own? And instead say, I may not like the person, They may do things a little bit differently. They may vote differently. They may act differently. They may speak a different language. They may have a different color skin. They may be in a different socioeconomic class. They may be from my rival high school, or they may go to a business that I'm in competition with. It does not matter. Stop isolating yourself. All you're doing is cutting the cord. It's wrong. Stop. Because more importantly, the cord of three strands, most everyone is in agreement that this has to do with Jesus. And I think that's important. That having Jesus in relationship gives you meaning. Because without Jesus, there is no meaning, right? So without Jesus, right, maybe your wife, your husband, they're going to die. Well, now what? Never going to see him again, right? Because you won't without Jesus. Without Jesus, you won't. Or you have kids, or you have parents, and without Jesus, relationships are meaningless, right? Without Christ, it makes no sense. Now, I really wish it was something where once you have Jesus in your life and in your relationship that everything now is perfect, right? Don't you wish that was the case? No, yeah, it isn't. So if you're like, oh, I'll just have a nice Christian relationship and everything will be perfect. No, it won't. It'll be really super duper hard. But it's not easily cut. It's not easily severed. Why? Because we're constantly having to act like Jesus. So when your husband does something stupid, and he will, I promise you, what are you mandated to do by none other than Jesus Christ himself? Forgive him. So yes, husbands, look at your wives. You must forgive me. And women, you have the same exact thing for you as well. Because guys, it is true, your wife is going to do something dumb. And you're like, but not as dumb as me. But yes, I can guarantee that as well. Not as stupid as you. But there's going to be times she's not going to do it right. And what do you need to do? You need to forgive them. You got kids that are terrible? I don't have any kids that are terrible, though, so it's pretty amazing. Yeah, well, I just lie to myself at night, too. You have to love them. Kids, you got parents that are terrible? Yeah, guess what? You have to. You have to love them. No, don't give me no excuses. No. You have to. See, be more like Daisy. Daisy loves everybody, and she loves her parents. Yeah, so you've got to love. That's the reason why having Jesus in your relationships is so important. It may not prevent tragedy, it may not prevent divorce, but having Christ as a part of your marriage, as a part of your relationships, is absolutely crucial, because a cord of three strands is not quickly broken. Two is better than one. Three is better than two. Without Jesus, you're nothing. Without Jesus, your marriage is meaningless. Without Jesus, your family relationships are meaningless. Without Jesus, your church relationships are meaningless. Christ is not a part of those. All right. He then goes on, better a poor but wise youth than an old but foolish king who no longer knows how to take warning. All right, so I've been hammering on the young people a lot. You guys are awesome. I love you. But you know the nice part that youth have that older people don't have? At least young people take directions most of the time. Right? If you really push it with the youth, you could get them to do what but have you ever tried to do that with an old person? Oh man, sometimes the old people can be stubborn. I'm not talking about you, Robert, I promise you. Robert is awesome, don't get me wrong. But do you see what he's saying? It's better when you are older and wiser to not think that you're a know-it-all. And when you are young, you can actually be wise. Some of the wisest things I've ever heard have come from teenagers. It's incredible. Don't despise your youth, and don't become a haughty old person. The youth may have come from prison to the kingship, or he may have been born in poverty without his kingdom. I saw that all who lived and walked under the sun followed the youth, the king's successor. Because guess what's going to happen? Old people are going to die, and that means the youth are going to take over. Isn't that great? You guys are going to take over. Yeah, because one day we're going to die. Guess what? Then you'll be old. And then you're going to die. And the young people, yeah. I tell you, I really am one of those people that I fear for. Because as I'm getting older and older, I'm becoming grumpier and grumpier. Why is that? But do you notice that? Like, oh my gosh, man, that's awfully. Can we turn the radio down a little bit? That's awfully loud, right? And I wonder if I'm gonna later on, some youth is gonna be like, hey, let's do something really crazy at church. Let's do hymns. I'm like, why would you want to do hymns? That's stupid. Let's sing something really rock and rolling. You know, oh man, you're so old. I'm waiting for the day. I'm getting grumpier and grumpier. But let me tell you, it's really important that youth who have life and vivaciousness and energy and joy. Let me tell you, I know that children are the future, but the children are the present. But children, don't forget, you're going to get old too. And without Jesus, youth, age, wisdom, knowledge, money, everything is meaningless. There was no end to all the people who were before them. But those who came later were not pleased with the successor. I guarantee you, whoever comes after me here at Searchlight, you're not going to like. Isn't that a great thought? You have no idea how often this happens. I'm just going to tell you, who here believes that the nation is always happy with the next president of the United States? Is anyone? No? No, because it's like you're going to upset at least half the United States. It's a guarantee. The midterms, who's going to be happy? Some people are and some people aren't. And guess what? That's how things go. You're never happy with things because you like the way things are and you don't want to change. Same thing with churches. I've watched as churches have had pastors and then the next pastor that comes in, totally, because you're not going to like them. And that's okay. I don't want you to make a shrine out of anything political. Do not make a shrine out of your own life. Do not make a shrine out of anything religious. Searchlight is nothing. We're nothing without Jesus. I don't care if you change the band. I don't care if you change the name. I don't care if you change the building. I don't care if you start doing hymns. I don't care what happens. The only thing that's important is Jesus. You want to restart a relationship with someone that you've been estranged with? Start it with Jesus. If you're getting ready to start a relationship, start it with Jesus. If you're struggling in the relationship, bring Jesus in on it. You'll watch how things change. You're having struggles with mom and dad, bring Jesus into it. You're having struggles with your professors or your boss, bring Jesus into it. And again, I'm not talking about walking around and just quoting Bible verses to your teachers and your bosses. You know, like, yes, and then God struck them with hemorrhoids. You know, that's a Bible passage. You should look that one up. No, it's learning how to be loving and caring to the people around you. I think we need more of that. I think that I'm starting to see a change happen in America. I really hope it sticks. That we've got to stop with this division and this hatred that's constantly around us. We need to start showing love, care, mercy, and joy. Not just to the people who are like us. Not just for the people who think like us and do what we want them to do. But for absolutely everyone. Because guess what? Two is better than one. Three is better than two. 87 is better than 3. And watch how with